Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Really excited, like super duper excited, mega excited for today's podcast. And I think you will be too. My guest is the great Dirk Nowitzki, NBA champion, NBA legend, newly inducted member of the 75th anniversary team. Arguably the greatest international player ever. Some may debate that. I believe he is. Certain to be in the Hall of Fame once he's eligible, I believe, next year. And also just one of the all-time great guys in this league. Dirk is the subject of a new book. It's called The Great Nowitzki, Basketball and the Meaning of Life. The author is Thomas Pletzinger, an award-winning German novelist, screenwriter, and basketball fanatic. It's a wonderful book chronicling Dirk's career. The author followed him around for several years, got to see his private workouts, got to know him and his inner circle really well. It's an up-close and personal look that I think we rarely saw during Dirk's career. The book was actually published a few years ago in German. It's now being re-released, in effect, in English here in the States by W.W. Norton & Company. They also hosted us for this interview in Manhattan, so thank you, Norton. Go find the book in all the usual places. I highly recommend it. Before we get to Dirk, a quick reminder, please subscribe, rate, and review The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on YouTube as well. Search there for Sports Illustrated Podcasts. You'll find us there. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my conversation with the one and only Dirk Nowitzki is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to be joined by a man who can be introduced by one name. Not that many guys in NBA history we could just say one name. Dirk, how are you, sir?
How's it going? Good to see you.
I'm great. Great to see you. Welcome to New York. We get the treat of occasional screaming and sirens and things in the background here. So
that's part of it. That's New York City.
We got to have the atmosphere built into it. We're not videoing this, folks, because we're in person at the offices of W.W. Norton, the publisher for this book that we'll discuss. So you can't see this, folks, but I need you to know that Dirk Nowitzki is holding the microphone, leaning back, much as he did through two decades of press conferences, and I think that's important to note.
That is my style. That is my style. That's what I do, yes.
I don't want to dwell on this too long, but when did you realize that was your style? Was that conscious? Did you realize that those of us who are watching you every night are starting to do, like, you know, Dirk's got this microphone thing. He doesn't do this like other people.
I'm not sure how that happened, but mostly at the press conferences after games, I was tired. I just wanted to lay back and chill and sit down and, you know, have a nice press conference with you guys and not be, you know, leaned, hunched forward or be too tight. And I just wanted to be a family type atmosphere, and hopefully that what it was.
You liked it. It was relaxing. Plus, it looked like at any minute you could just bust out in song, start, I don't know, singing Hasselhoff or something.
Oh, no, you don't want that action. You don't want that.
This podcast, anything goes. If you want to sing, you can sing.
I've been looking for freedom. All right, that's all I got.
Excellent. That's all right. That's worth the price of admission right there. New book out. Not that new. This came out, it was published in German 3 years ago. The book is The Great Nowitzki, Basketball and the Meaning of Life, by, I'm told, Thomas Pletzinger, described as an award-winning German novelist, screenwriter, and basketball fanatic. And I think the fanatic part's really important here, because the way he comes to you, this is in, I think, 2011, after you guys have won the championship, this big moment in your career, your life. And he spends the next, like, 7 years stalking you, essentially. I'm being facetious, of course. But you granted a ton of access to him. He writes through his own lens as a fan and as a fan of yours, in addition to telling your story. So it's very unusual. It's really compelling. How did this come about?
So Thomas is not the normal sports writer. You know, he's a real author, and he came up to me with this idea of making a book together. And I've known him from stuff before that we've done together. And I thought, sure, it might be interesting my last couple of years. And, you know, you can chronicle that and kind of be a part of that. Not knowing, of course, at the time that I was going to play another almost 10 years, and he had to follow me through this whole time. So, but, you know, he was part of the crew. You know, I have a small entourage of people in my circle, and Thomas was just part of the crew there for my last 7-8 years of my career. And he did a wonderful job just describing stuff that he saw out of his eyes and still telling my story. So I'd say it's not a normal biography or anything like that, but it's a cool read. And like you said, it came out in Germany a couple of years ago, and finally we had to translate it. We had to change some stuff for the American readers. Knows a lot more about basketball than the German average reader, so a lot of stuff has been changed a little bit, but I think it's a cool read, so if you want to check it out, go ahead.
Yeah, it is, of course, at bookstores everywhere. You mentioned in a Q&A this week with our buddy Mark Stein that you did read it, which I don't know that everybody reads a book about themselves. If there was an autobiography, obviously they're involved in it. This was a biography, so it is certainly, you are heavily involved in that. You were cooperating with it and giving him a lot of access, but it wasn't your work. So you read it, and you got, from what you told Stein, pretty emotional. Why was that? Were there particular parts that really just kind of hit you? What triggered it for you?
I think right away the start, if you read the book, is about my last game. And when I read the book, you know, in German 2 years ago, it was just when I had just retired. And I think maybe everything was so fresh in my mind. He does a wonderful job of in his book. Like I said, he's an author, so he describes these scenes really well, even with facial expressions of the fans. And it's just, he can always almost put you in at that time. That's how good he writes it. And so I don't know. It was just, I was emotional. It was I just had retired, and it just hit the spot. So I was actually on a plane going somewhere, and I had some tears coming in my eyes. It's just, that was to me the most emotional part, reading some of the fan reactions and just my last game and the whole spectacle I will never forget. So that would actually, for me, that was way more emotional than any other parts of my family story or winning the championship and all that. I think the last game, the last home game, the ceremony they put on for me, that was unbelievable.
You were always, you know, great with the media during your career, but there was probably a certain, like, there were lines, obviously. You weren't giving everything away. And so there's a lot in this book, it seems like, where you were ready to open up more about life and process and everything along the way. Do you think it was that he hit you at the right time to be a little bit more forthcoming? Or maybe also knowing, like, did you know when you guys first started on this, because he worked on this for like 7 years, did you know, like, okay, by the time this comes out, I'll be retired, so I don't have to worry about saying things now that might ruffle feathers in the present while I'm still playing. Like, were you more open because of the time? And also you also had the championship in hand at that point.
I think all of that plays a factor. I think I was not great at the media when I first started. I think I was shy. It wasn't my language. I didn't want to say the wrong thing. So then I kept my answers really short. Or most of the time I didn't even want to do interviews. And you know, the language got better, then I felt more comfortable and I could be myself and I could have fun. And so that's what I've been always trying to do is enjoy my time and you know, give the media, of course, the access that they need, because you understand the business part, and the media is a great platform to help you out, and it's a give and take. So I always had a good relationship with the media over my career. Only just the beginning was a little tough. And then, you know, I think the championship helped me a lot, you know, settle in. It kind of took a little bit of weight off my shoulder, and I could, I don't know if more proud, be more, have more confidence in interviews, because I'm in my head, I'm like, I've made it. I've brought a championship to Dallas, and that was that helped settle me down a lot in interviews. And then, yeah, also knowing the fact that Thomas is going to do good work, and I wanted to give him as much access as possible, because I like doing interviews, but I never really gave away too much private information about my wife, my kids, and stuff like that. So he even got to my went to my house, took some photos there. So that's stuff is in there that's that I've never done before. But felt comfortable with Thomas, and like I said, he was just part of my crew at the end. So I think I gave him enough access where it's a cool read, but he didn't really live at my house or anything like that.
There's this thing we do in the media and fans also about talking about the NBA and specifically about your career, and you're not the only one, but it's like, oh, well, the championship changed everything. Like Dirk Nowitzki, he was this amazing player, scored a bazillion points, changed the game, changed how we see big men, all these other things. But, well, the championship, that's this crowning achievement. And like literally that's, of course, true, and I'm sure you see it that way too. But there's also this where we put you in the all-time pecking order, whether it's among all international players or all-stars period, or where, Bill Simmons talks about the pyramid. The championship does something different. Are we wrong to do that, or do you see it that way yourself? Because your game is your game. Your accomplishments, everything else that you did on the court is identical with or without the championship, right? And those things turn on like couple shots by you, couple shots by Jason Terry. It's like, it's not, J.J. Barrett. Like, it's never one thing. But we say, oh, this changed everything. Is that ridiculous or is it right?
I get both sides. I'm a huge Charles Barkley fan. And I cannot fault him for not winning the championship because he ran into, Michael Jordan, who to me is the greatest player of all time. And so I'm sure in the 90s did a lot of other players that were right there, or the Knicks or whoever, with Ewing. And so I cannot fault some of these great players for not winning a championship. But on the other hand, I did want the same thing. I wanted to win one for my career as well. And like you said, it does add another level to your career. So I definitely wanted that on my resume. So I think we put a little bit of too much emphasis of winning it, but at the end of the day, that's what we all play for, to be the best, to compete against the best and get to the top of the mountain. So I'm a little bit torn. I think of course it's huge to win a championship, but I can't fault my guys that played so hard and tried but didn't end up getting over the top.
During the peak of your career, well, it's actually starting from the moment you entered the league, Dirk, and then through all those peak years, that was a time when the power forward was like the glamour position in this league, and it was stocked. So you come in, Karl Malone obviously still kicking people's asses, Rasheed Wallace, Chris Webber, Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, Jermaine O'Neal. I mean, I could go on.
Yes.
Describe the nightly gauntlet, and a lot of those guys were in the Western Conference too, mm-hmm. For most of their careers. How do you describe the nightly gauntlet, especially for you when you're coming in as like the skinny teenager from Germany, just trying to kind of find your way?
Yeah, it was amazing. Every night you had the challenge on my position, and the problem really for me was on the other side of the floor, on the defensive side. So I had to find a way to stay efficient enough to stay on the floor. I can still. I got good at fronting these guys when they were posting me, because I was obviously my upper body wasn't quite ready yet to hold these guys off. So I worked on techniques to front a lot. And, when they lob the ball over, there comes Sean Bradley. So I had to work really hard on that end. And on the offensive end, things were starting to click with Steve and Mike. But, the power forward position was loaded, and later with Zach Randolph and so many, Rasheed Wallace in Portland. There were so many great players, and it was fun to compete against the best every night. So, I think you raise your level if you have to bring it every night, and I think that helped my consistency over the years, and because you can't take a night off.
They're all tough. Those guys were all stars, and they all brought something different to the table. Who's the guy, though, when it's like 3 hours to game time, or you wake up from your afternoon nap and you're like, ah, shit, man, I got to deal with this guy. Like, who's the guy who made you stress out the most?
I mean, there were, like you said, a lot of challenges on the power forward position. There were some great defenders. Of course, Kevin Garnett's length. We've had some great battles over the years. I remember Kenyon Martin, or, you know, Haslam was a very good defender in our position. You know, Kenyon Martin, like I said, there, Sean Marion, we had some good battles in Phoenix back and forth. It was actually the guys that were a little smaller than me, but quicker, and they can still, on my spin, be there and kind of long enough still and athletic enough to challenge my turnaround. Those guys gave me some problems. So there's been some great battles with great competitors and great athletes. So these just really to name a few, but like you said earlier, there was a challenge in every game. Somebody had length, somebody had athleticism, and it's a tough league.
And especially then, like I say, especially your position. All right, so you've been out for a couple of years now. What do you like? It's always interesting to me when guys leave the game. This is such a big part of your life, your routine, but the competitive drive part of it, especially to leave that behind. I think when guys leave the game, it's always missing. You know, there's camaraderie, people, all this stuff, but there's routine. This is your every day is kind of programmed for most of the year. But also, like, there's this competitive drive that I don't think people realize, especially for guys who played at your level, who are soon to be Hall of Famer in your case, all-time, you know, the 75th anniversary team. Like, you're a different level. Like, some of these guys could probably walk away and be like, I'm fine. I think, like, guys at your level, it's harder. What are you doing to fill the competitive drive? Are you kicking people's butt at checkers? Like, what? Like, how are you feeling this? Because I know also you're still limping a little on the foot and ankle.
Yeah, so. I've had a little bit of problems now, you know, in my ankle over, you know, played for 21 years. So I don't really play any basketball anymore. I play a little tennis, some doubles. That's fun. And for a little bit, get the competitive juices flowing. I do play chess with my son, yeah. And he is really good. So I have a battle there. But honestly, I was looking forward to retirement. It was a long time, and obviously 21 years, and my health was declining there my last 2 years. So I think I was looking forward to things settling down, traveling with the kids and enjoying and food and traveling. So I think I was ready for it. And I think my first year was of course, strange. October rolls around. I enjoyed the summer first, of course. Then October comes around, and there was just this emptiness. You know, you don't need to report to camp. The season started, and you're watching from home. I think that was the strangest time in retirement so far, and I missed it, of course, there. But other than that, I got to say, I've adjusted really well. I'm staying busy. I'm doing other stuff. So I'm enjoying a lot of time with the family. And we are traveling a lot. So I got to say, I'm in a really good place. And I'm enjoying life.
I'm picturing you. That's all wonderful. I'm picturing you playing doubles tennis. Like, one, doubles, you don't have to cover as much ground. So the foot and ankle, that's not as much of an issue.
For sure.
Also, at your side, like, you don't have to move at all, probably, playing. You could just, like, reach out and cover, like, most of the court without actually moving your foot.
And the good thing is, I told the guys we play with, you cannot drop shot against me because I can never get there anymore. So you have to play a long ball to me. And that way I can have a good workout and my opponents can have fun. Because if they drop shot me, there's just no chance I'll get there at this point in my life. But no, I enjoy tennis. You know, tennis was my first sport, and it's all my kids are playing now because, first of all, it's great for hand-eye coordination. It's great for footwork, and it's a sport, you know, you can play for the rest of your life, even if you cannot move. Like in my case, you can't move much anymore, and you can still have some fun with friends. And so tennis is a great sport for that I can play for the rest of my life.
Anything you can do with the foot and ankle? I mentioned why we bumped to each other in Cleveland on All-Star weekend, and you're definitely favoring it a little bit. Is there any, like, it did not look comfortable?
The dress shoes definitely make it worse. Yeah. But you know, I just have to be healthy. It helps when I don't have a lot of sugar and I watch my diet, and you know, I'm lighter. I need to lose a little more weight, and then I think it's fine. Yeah. It's just, you know, when I'm not really living that healthy lifestyle and I'm letting myself go a little bit, it's when it gets a little worse. But Overall, honestly, I don't want to complain. You know, I played 21 years. Of course, you're not going to get out of there without anything. So it's fine. I can manage, and I'm enjoying life.
Speaking of uncomfortable and at All-Star Weekend, you and Dwayne Wade shared the broadcast booth on TNT for a few minutes, and I'm watching him going like, I'm not sure. What am I picking up on? Is it like this is kind of fun and interesting and it's a cool moment, or is there still like a little like 2006, 2011 kind of thing going on? What was the vibe?
No, I think we're both past that. Yeah. And we got honored our last season at the All-Star. Yeah. And we exchanged jerseys our last season together, and so I think we're past that. I think there were some times where we didn't really speak, and there were stuff said on both sides in interviews, I guess, that the other side didn't appreciate. So there were some cold times, I would describe them. But I think at the end of the day, there's mutual respect there for each other's careers and what they did for the sport and for their team. So I think these cold times or frosty times are behind us, and I'm happy for him, what he's been able to accomplish, and now what he's doing after his career with his TV and obviously part owner now of the Jazz, and so he's doing big things, and I'm happy for him.
Any grudges from your NBA career? Anybody you run into, you'd be like, not turn around, walking the other way, or
me, I'm super easygoing. There's a few guys that are a little sensitive. They thought that I got them traded.
Oh.
Which, of course, is not really the case. It's a fine line of being a franchise player and sometimes being involved on the business side or knowing about trade rumors and stuff like that. But other than that, I don't have any grudges against ex teammates or ex opponents. Not at all. I usually got to the gym. I try to help my team win, and I was all about business. And then I went home to my family or do my own thing. So I was never really getting too involved with opponents.
I figured not, but I figured I'd ask. And so the NBA 75 ceremony itself was rather amazing. I can't remember how many, was it not 60, 40, 50, whatever of you that were actually there. And it wasn't just the ceremony. There was some time where you guys were, I think, gathered up for some photo opportunities and everything else, I think at the Cavs practice court. What was that like? Were there guys that you set out? Did you, when you arrived the weekend, were there guys that you're like, I need to meet this guy because I hadn't met him before, or just people you wanted to rub elbows with for the first time? Tell me like who were the big ones for you?
Well, I got to say that was the most special moment of that weekend. I was a little late, and then I came in on the Cavs practice facility, and I walked in, and almost everybody was there already, and just seeing everybody. And that was, I think, the most special moment for me, just the wow effect. Like, this, I'm a part of this group right here. I mean, look around. This is this was fantastic. So I think that was the most special moment of the whole weekend, walking in on the Cavs practice facility. That was unbelievable. Really shared some great laughs with everybody. Talked to Shaq, talked to Charles Barkley, of course, who I love. Got to meet Bob Pettit for the first time. That was super cool. Talked to Kareem a little bit, who had a photo shoot for the whole 75 thing a few months earlier. And I mean, there was not one guy. I talked to Kevin McHale a bunch, and the Admiral, of course, big fan. So I don't know. It was just super cool to be in that room and being part of the crew. And I missed a couple guys. I wish Tim Duncan was there, yeah. Carl Malone or my boy Steve Nash. I missed a couple of the guys that I shared some great battles with. But it's still amazing, the guys that were there.
Your boy Mr. Nash is in COVID protocols as we tape this. This will publish on Friday, but it's Tuesday. I'll let the listeners know as we're recording this. Your guy went to protocols last night.
I didn't know that.
You
last night? No. Because
yes.
I almost went to his game. So he coached still last night?
No. Pre-game, he sat down. He's kind of coughing and sounding not so great or whatever, and did his whole pre-game media. And the next thing you know, he was tested into protocols. So that was that. I think Jacques Vaughn coached last night.
I didn't know that. Because last night we had an event with the book, and then we went to dinner, so I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
I'll text him now.
Because I was thinking, like, if you had any plans to see him while you were here briefly, I guess that would be out the window anyway.
Last night would have been the time to go, but no. No, I didn't. I'm not going to end up seeing him.
How often do you check in with him? Like, he's had the weirdest start to a coaching career. I mean, obviously, he came in, you got a star-stock team and everything else, and then another star, but now that star's gone, and it's a different star, Harden, Simmons, whatever, Kyrie plays only half the game. Like, it's nuts. How's he holding up? Are you counseling him long distance?
You know, honestly, I'll check on him once in a while. I don't want to bother him too much. I know there's a lot on his plate. There is a lot on his plate leading that ship. So I check in occasionally on him every couple of weeks, say, hey, how's it going? How you feeling? And then I don't want to bother him with like basketball questions and stuff he needs to talk about anyways every day and get asked in press conference. So I want to check on him. How's he doing? How's life? How are the kids? And I'm sure when we get together at some point, maybe after the season, we'll dive a little bit further into what's happening. How was the season? But I don't really want to, you know, pile on and start asking how's KD, how's his health, when is he coming back? that's not me, and that's I don't want to bother him. But yeah, I'm sure it's a lot, you know. First in the New York market, of course, and then the high expectations, the pressure, and then all the injuries that came. I still think if Kyrie and Harden don't get hurt last year, to me they should have won the championship. So it was disappointing. I was disappointed for him, that all that happened, and then all the stuff that happened this year. So I'm sure in his, you know, 2 years, he can already write a full book about that whole circus. So, but I wish him obviously well, and we're still very good friends.
Does not sound like you are at all envious of him, his coaching career, while you're chilling with your family, traveling through Europe for 3 months.
I gotta say, I'm good. But yeah, you know, he's been out for a long time. I think he was out for 5-6 years or something. So he had that time that I'm doing now. He did all of that, where he was all over the place and enjoying family, living by the beach in LA. So he's done all that. And you know, I guess he's just a few years ahead. I'm sure in a few years I'm getting that itch back, and I want to do something or help out. And now I'm just obviously in a little advising role with the Mavs, I'm sure. Or in future time, maybe I'll get involved a little more. As of now, I'm really enjoying the situation that I'm in.
You're close to Cuban. You're still working with the Mavs. How many times per year do you say, you know, if you had just re-signed Steve back in the day?
I think I haven't brought that up in a minute. It's been a while. You know, at the beginning, every time I said it to him, he was really sensitive about it. I'm like, no, that was the right decision at the time. And then finally, I think we were all together with Steve somewhere at somebody's wedding, and we were all there, and we had a few drinks, and that was the first time he then admitted, you know what, I made a mistake, which is a big step for Mark. You know, that those couple words don't leave his mouth very often. So that, but honestly, I can see where Mark came from at the time. Understood, of course, it's a business. Steve had some back problems at the time, and you know, Phoenix offered him 5-6 years, which Mark didn't want to commit to. So I understood it at the time. Of course, the way it played out, it was a mistake. But hey, it might have been for the better of our careers, anyways. I think that what Steve did in Phoenix this following years was unbelievable to watch, and I was able to develop obviously into the player that I became. Because Steve left and Finn left the following year, and I was kind of like thrown into the deep end and say, hey, now you're the leader, take over. And then I was able to really grow into what I became. So, yeah, you know, who knows? I think it all played out the way it did, and it was fine.
We just referenced the fact that Steve's coaching this team, where obviously just James Harden forced his way to Brooklyn, now has forced his way out of Brooklyn. Ben Simmons forced his way to Brooklyn. Kyrie Irving has forced his way. Paul George a couple of times. Like, it's all, like, this is, I counted 11 forced trades in the last 5 seasons, including 2 guys, Harden and Paul George, who have each done it twice. This is the new normal. You spent 21 years with one franchise. Obviously, Kobe went, you know, start to finish with the Lakers. Duncan did it with the Spurs. I don't know if you guys are going to be the last. I mean, Steph is probably going to spend his entire career with the Warriors, but whether it's free agency or now this new trend of forced trades, like it's this time where guys are bouncing around. And it wasn't always all happy times for you in Dallas either. What's the closest you ever came to, whether it would have been to walk away or to ask for a trade? Was there ever a moment where you seriously considered it?
Not really. I think the only reason would have been if we wouldn't have won the championship. You know, at the end of my career, I could have maybe tried somewhere else to get that ring. I think that would have been really the only reason for me to leave. But, you know, for me, Dallas was the place. The people supported me from the beginning, even when things weren't going right for me in my first year, and they always gave me standing ovation. So I felt like the fan base there wanted me to succeed, and they, Mark would obviously was always loyal to me, and you know, making me the franchise player, and so I always felt like in my heart I wanted to pay that loyalty back and be, of course, in Dallas for the rest of my career. And like I said, the only reason would have been to chase a ring somewhere and you know, team up with some other players. But other than that, fortunately, that never came that way because we got that championship in 11. And you know, it's definitely new. We always felt like the players didn't have enough power at the beginning of my career, and the owners had all the power and could make all the moves. And now it's almost shifting like a little bit of too much. I think there should be like a happy medium, but now the players, you know, forcing themselves out is not the way to go either. So I wish we could find a little happy medium there. I'm not sure how to get there, but yeah, I was old school. For me, I don't want to sit here and judge these guys that are doing that. I think everybody has to know what's best for themselves, for their career, for their brand. You know, everybody has a brand now. And what's best for their family. For me, it was staying in Dallas. It worked out great there, and I've had my family there, and I loved it, and I grew into that community. So that's something that just worked for me. But of course, I get it. It's not for everybody.
When you watch the game now, and you see what Giannis at essentially 7 feet is doing, what Joel Embiid is doing, what Jokic is doing, do you watch those guys and go like, yeah, I did that? That was that. Like, I don't mean that you did what they're doing, but like, you paved the way. You were the 7-footer who stepped out and hit threes and one-legged shots and put the ball on the deck and everything else, and changed the way we view 7-footers. So do you see that? Is there a little pride in like where this has gone?
Of course, it's great to see these guys come over and do all that from, you know, come from Europe or from wherever, from Africa. And have an impact on his league, and play the way they play. It's fun to see. I think it just shows the evolution of basketball, of the league, the last 20, 25 years. And there were a few guys, of course, that helped me. We mentioned Trent already, a guy like Kukoc who could spread the floor, put the ball in the deck a little bit. And then if I took that to another level, then of course I'm honored and humbled. And if I helped inspire some of these kids to play the way they do now, then, or play just a small role in their careers, then that's of course an honor for me. So it's been fun to watch where when I came in the late 90s, how the game has evolved, what these big guys are doing now in terms of handling the ball and shooting and the skill level. When I came in the league, every four was still big and rebounders, and now all the fours now shoot and drive and even run some pick and rolls. And it's been fun to watch where the game has gone over the last 20 years.
There's this fun commercial right now out, kind of fun, kind of creepy, LeBron talking to younger LeBron. Have you seen this?
I have not.
So, all right, so it's current LeBron talking to like 17, 18-year-old LeBron who's about to like come to the league. And it's this whole thing of like that, you know, what do you tell your younger self, right? And what do you not tell your younger self? We can't actually do that, unfortunately, except in shoe commercials. I think it's a shoe commercial. So you can't go back and tell 18-year-old Dirk what to expect or how to handle it. But you do have Luka, and there were all these comparisons, you know, appropriate or not. And I know you said to Stein, I don't really consider myself a mentor, just a friend and a, you know, a sounding board, whatever. But that's kind of the opportunity, right? Like, you can tell a young Luka what young Dirk maybe needed to know. So is there anything to that? Are there some things that where it's like you are looking at him as the version of you then that needed to hear some things that maybe you did not know?
Well, you know, I think I'm a big fan of going through stuff. I think you can't always say, hey, you know, you need to do such and such. I think everybody kind of has to find their own way, make their own experiences, and learn from maybe some mistakes. Of course, I want to be there for him and guide him through if there's anything. But I still think he needs to go through some of the tough times, and that makes you better, makes you in a more complete player, a more complete person. So, but if there's anything, always I can help him with. I'm obviously in his corner. I want him to succeed. He's a great kid and a wonderful, wonderful player. So, I'm always there for him if he needs me. And I'm not sure what I would tell myself if I was 19, 20 coming to the league now. I think, some of these experiences I made were valuable. I think I would have probably changed my diet a little earlier. We just didn't know that much about diet and training early in my 20s. We still ate hamburgers and chicken fingers pregame.
There was McDonald's in the locker room when I first started covering this league in the late 90s.
we had no idea about that stuff. So I think that's some of the stuff I would have done a little earlier. But other than that, I had to go through all these playoff losses and experiences to come out at the end on top.
I think that's something I've learned as a parent too, right? Like my daughter's 16 now, and there's all these things where I'm always like trying to think of like these ways I could like tell her, like, and you can't keep your kids or a protege like Luca, you can't keep them from making the same mistakes or whatever. You're right. Like everybody has to kind of find their own way, and it's something you kind of realize as a parent, or in your case, as maybe as a mentor-ish figure. Mm-hmm. But it's frustrating, right? Because I want to like steer like my daughter clear of like no, don't do that. Like that's an idiotic thing to do. Like don't, yeah. It's for impossible. Sure. It's impossible to avoid. I've wondered about this over the years. When you came in, so we've got this kind of European revolution for a time there. Pau Gasol comes in from Spain. You come in. And there was an Italian influx at one point. And you kind of think like this is the beginning of a wave, right? The NBA has become international. We talk about the 92 Olympics and the Dream Team as having opened up the world to this sport. And there wasn't like this massive pipeline behind you, though. Like there have been, and there are, today, a few players from Germany in the league. But maybe not at the level that I think some of us thought. And not just, again, not just Germany, but Spain, Italy, the places that produced, France. Is there anything to that? Maybe just to the German program, but like why haven't we seen like the next, there's no next Dirk, that's stupid, but why why wasn't there more of an influx at a high level?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Why that is. I always try to play national team in the summer and, promote the sport, make the sport bigger, have more kids, As we know, in Europe, soccer is still number one everywhere. And what we try to do in Pau or Tony Parker in France, we still try to play every summer for our national team to promote the sport, to make our sport bigger, to have the local fans there see us and get inspired. And so I think we're doing okay. We've had some good players come out from Germany, but maybe not, or from Europe, maybe not at the level that we were hoping. But we have Schroeder and we have some Maxi, and of course we have really good players. So hopefully in the future we have even more and even greater players come up. But that's what we always try to do is be present this summer, play and promote our sport.
A couple more before I get you out of here. I know you got a few more of these to do. Any personal disappointment in seeing Luka and Porzingis not ever quite click at that level? There's a health issue with Porzingis, or health issues, I should say, but broken up a couple weeks ago at the trade deadline. How'd you feel about it?
Yeah, sad. Sad. I think if you look on paper, those two were meant for each other, the way they play and the game is played now. KP is just the perfect five nowadays, with his length, with the shooting abilities, can pick and pop, can pick and roll, can switch it up, can guard the rim. So I'm not really sure what fully transpired there. I wasn't there every day. But that it's just unfortunate. I think we had those guys set up to be successful for a long, long time, and just sometimes for whatever reason, just don't work out the way you had that planned. But I like KP. I got to know him a little bit there. He was traded to us in my last season, so obviously he didn't play there. He was still hurt, but got to spend a lot of time with him, see him on a daily basis, how hard he worked to get back, and so. Hopefully he can stay healthy. I mean, I'm a big fan of his game. Hopefully he can stay healthy enough to to have a great rest of his career. I mean, I'm a big fan.
It feels like the Mavs are now in that position where they were often in with you, where it's like you get that one transcendent star, a Dirk Nowitzki, a Luka Doncic, and then the whole thing is, all right, where are we going to find that second guy? And that was the vision for Porzingis, was to be the co-star. It didn't quite work out that way. And so now I feel like that's, you know, Cuban and the organization are back to that same place where they were with you a lot of the time, where it was like, all right, how do we get the right guys around this so that we can see Luka on the biggest stage?
Yeah, and obviously there's numerous ways, whether that's through draft, whether that's through free agency. But, you know, your goal is always to improve your franchise and obviously help Luka out at the highest level. So I think another playmaker helps. So I think actually Spencer Dinwiddie has been great for us since the trade. We needed another playmaker who can take some pressure off of Luka. But yeah, I'm sure that's the goal here for the future. You know, find the best players around him, keep the pieces that we want to keep, of course, and see where it goes. But you know, we have Luka, obviously, for the next, 4 or 5 years. So that's obviously something you can build on and find some budding stars that mesh with his game. And so we'll see what the Mavs can pull off the next few years.
I want to go a quick different direction here before we wrap up. And just kind of go back, actually, to something we were talking about earlier. You had a great relationship with the media, and you talked about how you kind of evolved over time as you got more comfortable. You obviously got to be pretty close to our buddy Mark Stein, and that relationship I think benefited you both over time. During probably Mark more than you. Let's be real.
Mark more.
All-Star Weekend, Adam Silver kind of threw out this, what for us in the media was a little bit of a bombshell, talking about that he might want to keep the locker rooms closed forever. So the pregame and postgame access that you had with Stein and Tim McMahon and others, you know, out in Dallas, or that I've enjoyed as a reporter for my 25 years covering the league, that might be no more. And I just open-ended, like, how did you feel? Because there's issues that go behind that too. Are players comfortable in there? You know, are guys getting changed in there? Guys don't really get changed in the locker room anymore in today's NBA. But how did you feel about that? Both the pluses and the minuses there of we are invading your space to an extent, but at the same time, you do, like, in all seriousness, you and Mark Stein have a very good relationship, and this is the case across the league with players and reporters who cover them on a daily basis, the beat writers who are there day in, day out. And that's, from my perspective, that's how we get to know you guys and understand what you're about and tell the best stories and get the best insight. And there's really no other place for that. And so that's the case we make, right? How did you see it from your side of it?
I mean, I got to say, at the beginning, it was hard and weird for me. I wasn't used to it in Germany. So my first game, all of a sudden, there was all this German media. I'm trying to get dressed for the game, and I got anxious. But then, of course, I got used to it. It was part of the business. You're right. That's when you form relationship, when you sit there, get dressed, and, you know, you're done with the big scrum, and somebody would just stand there with you and ask for a couple more minutes, and you take your time, and you talk on a personal level even, and that's how you get to know people even better. So I see both sides. You know, if you at an All-Star game or at the finals or playoffs, and it was so packed sometimes after games, you're like, okay, this is getting ridiculous. You can barely get to your locker. I mean, that's too much then, I feel like, as well. So I don't know. I see both sides. You keep the locker room just for the players, like it is in soccer or other big clubs where, you know, you have your mixed zone or whatever the case may be, or your press conferences, but the locker room stays sacred. I don't know what to tell you there. You know, I can see both arguments for sure. But you were right. That's after games is when you form a good relationship with the writers that spend a lot of time with you.
Yeah, no, it's a complicated issue to be sure. And you know, obviously, people on my side of it, you know, we want to be sensitive to the players too. And over time, in my 25 years covering the league, as you noticed, because our careers, my career covering it, and your career span track most of the same years, it did change. There were more people in there, and it got a little more chaotic.
Yeah,
that's that part of it too.
I think when it got a little out of control was when we let every blogger in, and you know, and that's when it got a little bit out of hand. But I mean, I understand some of the obviously the big time writers and your beat writers that need to be there every day, be around and find good stories to write about. I think, that makes sense if they're around for sure.
Last thing before I get you out of here, I believe you're Hall of Fame eligible next year, right? 2023?
Yes.
Are you already, like, by the look on your face, I'm going to think you are already thinking about it a little bit. Not to presume anything, I'm pretty sure you're going in on the first ballot. Do you already start thinking about like who's presenting you and that kind of thing?
I haven't thought that far, but as far as I remember, it has to be somebody who's in the Hall of Fame, right?
Yes.
Because I went for Steve and Jay Kidd. I went. That was my first time going a couple years ago to support, obviously, the two point guards that helped me so much in my career. And it was fun just to seeing everything and seeing the ceremony. So I had a great time. And, of course, hopefully Steve and Jay Kidd will be there for me. And I will call upon them maybe to put me in the hall if that happens. Hopefully old Nelly Nels is still around by then. He's not leaving Maui much anymore, but... he's my guy, and he got me started back in the days and let me play my game. So I owe old Nels a lot, and so hopefully he'll be around when the time is right. So I guess that will be my crew if it ever gets to that point.
That would be a pretty good crew. And Nash had one of the best. I was at that one, and Nash had one of the great speeches that I've heard at the Hall of Fame. So that's a high bar. You got to somehow, you got to top Steve on that
he
one.
He's a smart guy. And I remember he didn't look on the monitor once, and I was like, how did you do that? You have to send your speech a couple of days before or a week before, and then they put it up. And he said, I didn't even look at that speech. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to say, and then it came all from the heart. So wow. That night, so
yeah.
He's a smart guy, and he's obviously very well spoken. So I don't think I could top that.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing you again. If not before, then in Springfield. Sometime in calendar year 2023. Dirk, this has been phenomenal. Again, the book, folks, is The Great Nowitzki, Basketball and the Meaning of Life by Tomas Pletzinger. Go find that at bookstores everywhere. Dirk, thanks so much for spending the time, man. It's been a blast.
Thank you. Good to see you.
You too. Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Dirk Nowitzki. Thanks to Will Scarlett and the folks at WW Norton & Company for coordinating and for hosting the interview. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Shelby Royston. Thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, @HowardBeck.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.